Thank you very much. I just want to say that I'm honored to give this talk on behalf of Bob O'Neill, who is unable to be here today. I will be talking about a completely alien system, and this system is the soybean aphid system in the United States, and including Canada. And what I'll do today is that I'll introduce you to the three players involved in this system, which are, of course, the soybean aphid, soybeans themselves, and then rhamnus, or buckthorn, which is the overwintering host of the soybean aphid. So to get started, let's look at the first player, and this is the soybean aphid. The soybean aphid is Aphis glycinus matsumura. It's a small aphid, as depicted down on the bottom right. A small aphid, yellowish-green with black cornicles. It's originally from Asia and was first discovered in the United States in 2000 in Wisconsin. And within the first year, it spread to about 22 states throughout the United States, as well as some Canadian provinces. And these aphids tend to exist on the bottom sides of the soybean leaves, as you can see here on the picture on the left. Since its introduction, this insect has become the number one soybean pest in the United States within a very short period of time. It has current range throughout most of the Midwest, as well as some of the Canadian provinces. And the high infestations result in yield losses, primarily by reduced pod production as well as smaller seed production. And these high infestations also cause increased control costs, primarily because of needed foliar insecticide sprays to control the pest. To deal with this situation, they've developed an economic threshold that involves 250 aphids per plant. And above this, you see the economic losses. But below this, the reason they have this at 250 is because the natural enemies are able to exert their control on the soybeans, and they don't need to spray at all. To give you an idea of exactly what we're talking about when there is an infestation, we're looking at outbreaks in high infestation years of about 300 million aphids per acre. It's a high number, but that's what is possible. And when you have a high infestation, it tends to look like this leaf on the bottom left. They're really, really covered with aphids. And I just want to give you a quick snapshot, basically, of what an infestation year can look like. This is some information that came from Rodas and O'Neill that was published in American Entomologist in 2006. 2003 was a very high infestation year in Indiana, as well as the rest of the Midwest. And in 2003, 2.2 million acres of, or not acres, hectares, I'm sorry, of soybeans were planted in Indiana. About half of that was infested with the soybean aphid. And they deemed that about 280,000 hectares needed sprays, or foliar insecticide sprays, to control the soybean aphid because they went over a threshold. And if they estimate that the cost per hectare of sprays is about $25, you end up with costs of about $7 million spent solely on application sprays alone. And that's only for the state of Indiana. Now, if we take a look at the range of the soybean aphid throughout the Midwest, which is primarily depicted in purple and light purple, you can see that it is throughout most of the Midwest, and it's also in Canada, but it's not shown on this map, and it's also up in some of the northeastern states as well. And now if we compare this to U.S. soybean production areas, you can see that there's a very, very strong overlap of where the soybean production occurs in the United States to where the soybean aphid currently exists. And one of the important parts to look at in this system is to understand the biology of the insect involved. The soybean aphid has a heteroecious holocyclic life cycle, meaning that it alternates between two very distinct host plants, and these host plants are the other two players involved in the system. They are the soybean itself, of course, and then the overwintering host of the aphid, which is rhamnus, also known as buckthorn. It's a very common horticultural plant that used to be used a lot, and has since become in itself an invasive species as well. The soybean aphid also alternates between a sexual and an asexual reproductive phase, with the sexual reproduction occurring on the rhamnus species and asexual reproduction occurring on the soybean plants. And during the summertime, the aphids reproduce by parthenogenesis, which involves no mating to have offspring. And during the summertime, all these aphids that are found on the soybeans are female. Now this is a diagram of the basic life cycle of the soybean aphid. And what I want you to note are what is occurring on the soybeans and what is occurring on the buckthorn. So I'll start up here with the summer population. During the summertime, the aphids alternate between a winged form and a wingless form, or an apterous and an alate form. And they develop the wing form when there are very high aphid numbers, and it gives them the ability to migrate to uninfested areas of soybeans, whether within a field or even to new fields. And when there are ideal conditions, the soybean aphid actually has the ability to reproduce up to develop at least 18 generations within a single summer, which you can see is a very high reproductive potential. When the soybeans start to mature in fall, the aphids begin to migrate from the soybeans to the rhamnus, as in over here. And it is on the rhamnus where sexual reproduction occurs, and you have males and females that develop. And the females then lay their eggs on the buds of the rhamnus plants. These eggs are the overwintering stage of the aphid. So then in the springtime, the eggs hatch, and you have a new batch of aphids that develop. And during the springtime, there may be several generations that occur before they migrate back to the soybeans. And that's because when the aphids actually hatch, that sometime in the end of, or sometime in March, the soybeans themselves don't actually come out until the end of May or June, so there is a lag period there. What I want to show here is some of the population dynamics within a single season of the soybean aphid. This is actually data that came from 2007. What I'll show is a period of time that goes from June until September. And what I want you to note on the bottom are the color changes that show the number of aphids that will be occurring. So you'll have the greens and the blues at low aphid numbers, and then as we get up to the purples, those will be high aphid numbers, and the purples are actually aphid numbers that are over threshold. So as you can see, within a single season, the aphids really spread out and cover a large geographic area. So I touched on the life cycle, but there are some points that I really want to make that make this pest, or this insect, has with a really high pest potential. And some of those characteristics are, since they do have a high reproductive potential, it's primarily because the females don't need to mate during the summertime when they're in the soybeans. They also have the ability to have up to 18 generations annually during the summer season. And these aphids also have the ability to migrate to new and uninfested areas. The soybean aphid has the two distinct host plants, as I mentioned earlier, and fortunately, these two host plants are very readily available in the areas where the soybean aphids are now. In addition, there's a very similar climate to where the aphid is originally from in Asia. And I want to show you that by this. As you can see over on the right side, that's the area of origin of the soybean aphid, and we have the United States over here where it's found, and it's a very similar latitude and very, very similar climate, so which makes it very ideal for the soybean aphid to thrive. In addition to the life cycle characteristics that make this pest have high pest potential, there's also the characteristic that's unique to this soybean aphid, to the soybean system, in that there is this periodicity that has been observed since the aphid was first found. These are year-to-year fluctuations in aphid numbers, and although this does happen in natural systems, it's very unique in agricultural systems, and it has been observed throughout most of the Midwest where the soybean aphid is found. And I wanted to show you this by this graph here, which comes from data in our lab. This is data from 2001 until 2006, and on the y-axis we have severity that tells the number of aphids per plant. What this shows here is that in 2002, 2004, and 2006, or the even years, we have very low numbers of aphids. And in those years, the natural enemies that are present out in the soybean fields are actually able to control aphid numbers and keep them below threshold levels. However, in the odd number of years, we get these very, very high outbreaks of aphids, and this requires the foliar insecticide sprays that are used, and what causes this insect to become such a major pest. The mechanisms behind this phenomenon are not really known, although they probably think that it's a lot of influence of natural enemies involved, the specifics of which natural enemies we don't know yet. So the second player that I want to talk about is the soybeans. As you know, it's the summer host of the soybean aphid. Quickly touch on some of the history of the U.S. soybeans, because this also is a plant that was introduced from Asia in the early 1800s. The acreage of soybeans in the United States really didn't increase until about the 1940s when World War II came along. But today we see over 70 million acres planted annually in the United States. And over 3 billion bushels are harvested annually. So you can see this host part of the soybean aphid system is definitely present and available. And the third player in the system is Rhamnus buckthorn. As I mentioned, it's a very common horticultural plant that is used. There are several host species that are used by the soybean aphid. In Asia, they are found on Rhamnus divirica and Rhamnus japonica. Rhamnus divirica is also found in the United States. However, it is very rare and so is not really considered a host for the soybean aphid. In the Midwest, we have Rhamnus cathartica, Rhamnus sprengula, and Rhamnus alnifolia. And Rhamnus alnifolia is the only native Rhamnus species that's found. However, it's very rare, so we don't really consider that a host either. Rhamnus sprengula and Rhamnus cathartica are both exotic species. And Rhamnus sprengula, although it does show potential to be a host, really isn't considered a major host for the soybean aphid. So when I'm talking about the host plant, the overwintering host plant, I'm primarily talking about Rhamnus cathartica. And Rhamnus cathartica has in itself become an extremely significant invasive species in itself and is prevalently found throughout the Midwest, especially in southern parts of Wisconsin and Michigan and northern parts of Indiana and Illinois, and can be found in very dense and extensive groves, basically. And I'll show some pictures in a minute. This is the range of Rhamnus cathartica in the United States. As you can see, it's very extensive, and it definitely overlaps with where the soybean aphid is found, as well as where the soybean aphid and soybeans are found. In case you're not familiar, this is Rhamnus cathartica. Here's some pictures for you to see. These are eggs that are actually found on a bud of Rhamnus cathartica. Those are the soybean aphid eggs, and there are a lot of them found on a single bud. They're very, very tiny. This is what I like to call Rhamnus monoculture, and it's very common in southern Wisconsin, where I'm from. It's like pure groves, basically, of Rhamnus cathartica, and so this is definitely an available overwintering plant for the soybean aphid. Now, I just want to touch on some of the control options, both current control options and potential control options for the soybean aphid. Primarily, this pest has been dealt with IPM, Integrated Pest Management, with the development of threshold, as I mentioned earlier, the 250 aphids per plant. They developed a lot of different sampling techniques and improving upon sampling techniques to determine whether the aphids actually are over threshold. And there's a lot of extension work that goes on to educate people, farmers, and everyone else involved in the system on the soybean aphid, as well as the other players involved in this system. Another control option that is being explored is biological control, and that's what my lab does work on. We're looking at not only the role of natural enemies that are native, but also we're looking at classical biological control, where we introduce a natural enemy to control the soybean aphid. And we've looked at for natural enemies that are over in Asia. And in 2007, we actually did the first release in the Midwest of Bynodoxus communis, which is an aphid parasitoid wasp. And hopefully in the future, we'll see some control exerted by this parasitoid. Another potential option that does not yet exist is host plant resistance. Host plant resistance has been found in wild perennial soybeans, and it's resistance against both the soybean aphid and soybean mosaic virus. So hopefully in the future this will be an option that could be used. Some other progress is that there's a lot of collaborative efforts between universities and soybean producers, the USDA, as well as industries to work on this pest situation and work together and find alternative means to deal with it. So I just want to summarize everything and take a look at this, what I call a truly alien system, because we're dealing with three players here that are all not native to the United States. We first have the soybean aphid, which as you've seen, since its introduction, has become a major economic pest and one that really needs to be dealt with. But we can't deal with it alone because it has two other components that really need to be considered. And that second player is the soybeans, which in itself is the second largest crop in the United States in terms of acreage behind corn. So it's definitely present here, and it's probably not going anywhere because it's such a major crop. The third player is buckthorn, or rhamnus, as I mentioned. And this also has become an invasive species, and so this is being dealt with on its own, although control measures are going to be very difficult with this. So when we're dealing with the soybean aphid system, we need to look at each of the components separately and really understand the biology behind each one and how those host plants influence the soybean aphid itself when we're trying to develop different control methods. And so how can we use this in future invasive pests, as I'm sure that there will be future invasive pests? Well, there's the potential to use the soybean aphid system as a model for new pests that develop with multiple hosts. And we can use the thought process that's went into the soybean aphid and what's been developed in terms of thresholds and different sampling methods and in terms of how we've dealt with the research itself and use that hopefully and apply it to any new system or new pest that may develop in the future. Thank you very much.
We do have time for some questions.
Sure.
So if there are some for Thelma.
Yes.
What I'm curious about is it known that it actually the movement of the aphid in a migratory fashion, or just the timing of soybeans and the movement from one host to another?
The timing of what?
The timing of soybean growth and the movement of the insects from one host to the other.
Well, I think most of the soybeans are probably going to be planted all at the same time, and so they're developing all about the same time. So it is going to be the movement of aphids. The actual overwintering place of it is not necessarily where it's found throughout the United States. There are certain areas where it actually overwinters, like in Michigan and parts of Canada, more so than in other areas. And so then it actually does migrate during the season to those other parts. Yes?
What's responsible for the large fluctuation in human and the odd year populations?
That's a very good question.
Oh, for the recording.
Sure. The question was, what is responsible for the large fluctuations that occur between the even and the odd years? And that is something that we're not really sure about yet. We think that it has to do with the natural enemies involved. I'm sure it does. As to which ones exert like the most influence on it, there are a lot of ladybugs out there, and there are a lot of parasitoids as well. So we're not exactly sure what the exact factor would be involved with that.
The
question was, what kind of damage is incurred in the rhamnus itself? There really is no damage to the rhamnus itself, and even if there was, nobody would really care because it's such an invasive species. But no, they just lay their eggs on there, and there really isn't any kind of economic impact to it. Yes? In Asia, the soybean aphid is not a pest. It's a very sporadic pest because the natural enemies that are there keep it under control. And when it came to the United States, it lacked all those natural enemies. And that's why we're really trying to do biological control on this system because of the situation that, or the lack of pest situation that does exist over in Asia. The exact way that it was transported here is not really known. We suspect that it probably came through a port, maybe in Michigan, but we're not even sure that it necessarily first came in 2000. It may have come in before that when it was just not noticed. But I'm guessing it was probably through a port, whether it was somebody carrying in soybeans or came in on edamame. The exact method is not known. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.